If you follow politics, if you follow presidential politics, if you're just interested in where this country is going these days, a book that should be on your shelf is Presidential Swing States, Why Only 10 Matter. The guy who wrote the book's been on this show before. He's a constitutional law professor and a political observer named Dave Schultz. He joins us again on WGN. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me again, John.
First question. I mean, we had a lot to talk about today, but now that Jeff Sessions is out, I want to start there. He's resigned at the president's request. Do you know exactly what happens next, Dave? Does the president appoint a new attorney general? And then would that attorney general then maybe, or does Rod Rosenstein step up? Is he the attorney general now?
Well, what it looks like right now is that Rosenstein would be probably the acting attorney general at this point until such time as Donald Trump nominates and has somebody confirmed by the Senate. And that's the important part to remember here. The Constitution says that the Senate has to eventually do the confirmation. So the president can, you know, and who knows who he's going to pick? I have no idea at this point. There's probably lots of speculation. But right now, assuming that the resignation is effective immediately, Rosenstein is the acting attorney general. Much in the same way we might recall when Obama was leaving office, there was, and I forget her name now, she was a carryover from the Obama administration. She was the acting attorney general for Donald Trump for those first few weeks. I forget her name now, but you know who I mean. Yeah, sure.
The one that was met with Bill Clinton on the tarmac, that one. The name will come to me.
No, it's a different person after that. I can't remember her name now. And the president and Trump fired her. I'm just blanking on her name at this point. But anyhow, the point is that Rosenstein should be the acting attorney general at this point.
Well, then, if the president appoints somebody and they're confirmed, then they can use that new authority to end the Mueller investigation, to direct the Mueller investigation, right? I mean, because that would be Rosenstein's boss. And while Sessions recused himself, I presume the new one the president's going to appoint won't. So that person would have oversight, right?
Would have oversight, but you're raising a good constitutional question regarding at this point whether or not that attorney general would have the ability to be able to end the investigation. I suspect probably the answer is yes, but I can see some constitutional questions being raised regarding whether or not that would happen. A president would be able to have an attorney general to do something like that. But more likely than not, I would say yes.
Yeah. By the way, I said that Sessions quit, but I'm reading online right now. Sessions was fired. Either way, he's no longer the attorney general.
He's out.
You know what surprised me last night on the coverage, Dave, was how quickly they went from, if the House is run by Democrats, what does that mean to the president? And immediately they started to talk not just about the Mueller investigation. They talked about committee oversight, and they started to talk about impeachment proceedings. What do you make of all of that?
Well, there's no question that, of course, that Congress has oversight authority over the executive branch. You know, they're funding all these different agencies. They have a right to know how that money's being spent, you know, in making sure that things are, you know, performing right. This is the whole concept of what? Checks and balances. But on the other hand, the idea of saying that we ought to be, or the Democrats are saying they ought to be moving towards impeaching the president of the United States. Remember, the Republicans control the Senate, and you can impeach somebody, but the Senate has to do a conviction. And even if the Democrats were to say, well, we're going to vote articles of impeachment, send it over to the Senate, I doubt you're going to get a conviction. Huh. Moreover, remember back when you were when Bill Clinton was president, the Republicans tried to push through the impeachment of Bill Clinton. I think it was in 97 or 98, and it failed. And there was a backlash against the Republicans in the election. If the Democrats were to push on the impeachment issue, I could see possibly in 2020 there being a backlash, you know, and against them. So this may be something they want to be thinking seriously about regarding whether or not they want to make their major goal, get Donald Trump.
That's interesting because I know the House draws up the articles. My thought was they wouldn't care. They just would like to throw a wrench at him. You don't have to be convicted. They could still say he was impeached. And I thought Democrats would love to have that little happy dance if they could get it. But I guess they need to look beyond that, huh?
Yeah, I think politically they need to think beyond that because, again, going back to the Bill Clinton example here, is that rarely does one party lose seats when it gets in a presidential election year when a president's up for re-election. You know, generally they do fairly well. But the same thing here is that if the Democrats were now to say in a year when the president is up for election. And they're now moving to impeach him. How does this play out? Does Trump now work to his base and say, look, we told you they were just out to get us. The Democrats are just a bunch of obstructionists. That may not play well politically with the base. And more importantly, I'm not sure how well that plays with the broader electorate in the United States that maybe not everybody agrees with that direction.
Your book was about the 10 states that matter. It's all about swing states these days. So does that play in a non-presidential election year? And based on that, what do you make of the new landscape, either governor's races or what we saw in the Senate? I kind of like your take on just what happened last night, Dave Schultz, in a minute. You and I shared text a little bit last night. That's Steve Bertrand. I'm John Williams in the Allstate Skyline studio. As we were watching the various TV stations cover the election, did you watch the basketball game at all last night between Duke and Kentucky?
I did not,
Oh,
no.
My God.
Was it good?
Kentucky, number two team in the country, really good, lost by 34.
Ooh.
They gave up 118 points to Duke, and Duke could have won that game by 50 points. I have never seen a highly ranked team like number two get so thoroughly trashed. And by the way, they will never be as good as Duke. Duke is on another planet right now.
My first thought there is that couldn't have happened to a better program.
A lot of people root for both of those programs, or against both of those programs, and for both of those programs. But it was entertaining to see these three freshmen just own the floor last night against number two, Kentucky. Wow, Northwestern. Hey, Loyola, you got your work cut out for you. I'm telling you right now. That was crazy. We've been visiting with Dave Schultz. He's a professor of political science at Hamline University and the author of a book about presidential swing states. He says there's only 10 that matter. And my question for Dave has been, okay, so based on what happened last night, what do you make of this sort of color composition of the country? Who gained? Who lost? I mean, talk a little bit about that, Dave. What did you think about what happened last night generally?
Well, two things I'm going to say here. First is think about what the Senate and the House look like now, is that the Senate, the Republican Senate, is more conservative than it was before, and the Democratic House is more liberal than it's before. They're moving in politically opposite directions, which is certainly not going to be the recipe for what political compromise. Second, if we look at the electorate, this is an electorate where the Democrats did well in the urban cores and sort of the more affluent suburbs. And we have a new political geography now that the Democratic Party is going to be what? Looking like going forward now, it's a geography of those urban liberals, young people of color, suburban women, suburban area, that the Republican Party is going to be what? The men in suburbs, it's going to be rural areas, it's going to be individuals who have a high school degree but not college. So we're looking at very different electorates with very different geographic bases and play out what? With having control of two separate institutions, House versus Senate, going in politically different directions. That's what I walked away with from last night.
Your book is Presidential Swing States, Why Only 10 Matter. Wisconsin has been one of those swing states, right?
Correct.
And what do you make of Scott Walker conceding the governor's race?
Well, this was a surprise, you know, because remember a few years ago, Scott Walker was a rising star in the Republican Party, and no longer so, obviously, now. But again, very, very close race. And I'm going to say that it's very hard, of course, to win a third term for governor in a lot of places. Not impossible. I think that's one factor. But I do think that Wisconsin, Scott Walker got caught up in the anti-Trump fever that we saw sweeping the country. And especially if you look at the turnouts in Milwaukee proper in Dane County, you know, which is where Madison is, they were exceedingly high. And I think they were what, in a large part, put Scott Walker out of office in the same way that it put lots of Republicans out of office in suburbs across the United States.
How is it that the House picked up the seats it did, and several governor's seats flipped blue, but the Senate went the other way? So I'm trying to figure out what that means about where America is right now.
Well, first off, the Senate was always a long shot for the Democrats, that there were 35 seats in the Senate up for election. Democrats were defending 26. In 10 of those states, they were senators who were running in states that Donald Trump had won 2 years ago. So it was a steep climb for Democrats there to start with. But flip side is the reason why they did well in terms of the House of Representatives is that the battleground was in the suburbs. And pretty much there were no Democrats in suburbs who were really in swing seats or in danger, versus the estimate was well in excess of 70 Republicans in suburban areas who were considered to be in vulnerable districts. And so it's really about geography here in many ways, or political geography in terms of how the lay of the land was set up, what kind of seats we're talking about. Are we talking about, you know, overall state versus talking about Senate seats? A lot of that came into play.
You know, the last thing I was just wondering last night, Dave, and I don't know that anybody knows the answer to this, but you say, okay, well, you know, the Senate is maybe more important than the House, but the House is the people's branch of the government. And I'm just wondering what was more representative of the tone of the country right now. Maybe it's the governor's offices, maybe it's the Senate, maybe it's the president, I don't know. But I literally was wondering, I wonder if more votes were cast in aggregate for Democrats last night, or did more people vote for Republicans, and if that was telling in any way.
More for Democrats, including in the Senate. If we look at it, even though the Republicans held the Senate and increased the number of seats that they held, if we actually look at the number of votes cast for senators, more were cast for Democratic ballots than were cast for Republican ballots for Senate. Mm-hmm. And the same thing, by the way, in the House of Representatives. So the Democrats actually did exceedingly well. I haven't seen the final numbers, but around 56% of the votes that were cast last night, I think 56%, give or take, we'll get a better number probably in the next 24 hours, were cast for Democrats.
Nice to talk to you again, Dave. Anything else you want me to hear before I hang up on you?
I think the only thing I want you to hear is to think in terms of how this all starts to play out for what? The 2020 election, because it's now starting.
I don't want to do that, Dave. Don't make me do that. I don't want to talk about it. Presidential
okay.
Swing states.
But that's right.
Why only 10 matter. Thank you, Dave Schultz over at Hamlin. We'll visit again, my friend.
Anytime. Bye.